playing the music of Damn Yankees on After Hours today because even though I'm not really fond of the Cubs, their magic number is 10, so we're in the midst of baseball fever. It is my great, there's the great laugh you all remember so well.
Yeah,
my dear old friend, Tony Fitzpatrick, and I were just talking about how long we've known each other.
Since I was 19.
And what kind of adventures we had when we were younger and Tony drank.
Those were
the big adventures.
We both know where the bodies are buried.
That is a fact. So. That is a fact. We are joined, and thanks to Tony, he was telling me about this art show that's coming up that opens Friday at the Park Art Center in Villa Park at a gallery run by Paulina Jimenez, who is here. Hi, Paulina.
Hi, how are you?
You got to talk closer to the microphone.
Hello.
You're a visually oriented. It's not as fragile as it looks.
All right.
And making his inaugural radio appearance, artist, Kirk Kendall.
Hi.
Kendall?
I'm sorry.
You'll never be on another radio station. Kendall, sorry. You haven't been on. That's why.
Yes,
I know how to pronounce Tony's last name. Paulina, how did you conceptualize this show? It is called Local Boys Done Good, the works of Tony Fitzpatrick, who's a fairly well-known artist, and Kirk Kendall,
who is
not so fairly well-known. How did you conceptualize this show?
Well,
how did it come to be?
I actually have to give credit where credit's due. We've been trying to get Tony for the longest time because we're located in Villa Park, Illinois. And Tony has his first studio back 25 years ago, in Villa Park. So there was a connection there. And through a mutual friend that we know, Marie, we've been trying to get him, but he, as you know, he's a very busy man and the schedule quite always conflicting. But finally, through Anne-Marie and Tony have heard about our situation in Villa Park and the studio that we're in jeopardy or losing our location, our art center. So we've reached out, we tried again, and we got a hold this time of Tony. And then we were talking back and forth, and actually I have to say it was Tony's idea, and he said, you know, I would love to do the show, but I also would love to do it with this local artist. And he's in a position now where he's so generous and willing to give back.
Well, that's a great thing. If you can get a hold of Tony, and no matter what you ask him, he will say yes. No matter what it is. Will you do my book cover? Will you do this? How would you, Tony, heard of Kirk? Because
you know,
Tony's you're a national figure now. And Kirk, you have stayed kind of local.
I'm very local.
You're very local.
The odd thing was
that local, either.
Kirk and I pretty much grew up in the same town, you know, Lombard and Villa Park. And I left there 30 years ago, you know, 35 years ago now.
Yeah.
And people kept saying to me, you know, there's this guy out here, Kirk Kendall. And I said, you know, I know that name.
I stole his bike.
No.
Yeah.
I knew 17.
No, I knew his sister when I was in, like, you know, fourth grade, and I had a crush on her, and she didn't give me the time of day.
So you wrote off the whole family.
And we had several of the same friends, and it's the oddest music of chance that we never met.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, we had one friend, the late lamented Carmen Ernesti, who was the toughest guy in about a, you know, 100-mile square circle.
Beat him about everybody ever saw.
And then about a year ago, a really fine guy named Earl Bees reached out to me on Facebook. And he said, you know, Kirk Kendall is like a marvelous artist. Here's his page. And I started looking at it. And at one point on the page, there's a page of landscapes that reminded me so much of what DuPage County and Villa Park and south of Butterfield Road looked like when I was a kid out there.
Yeah, yeah.
It was farmer's field. Long before it was an industrial corridor and there was, you know, TGI Fridays and all that other stuff.
Right.
It was farmer's field. And I remember it. And these paintings just
were totally evocative, them to you.
Spoke to this kind of Andrew Wyeth-like ennui. If a painting could cry, that's what these do.
Kirk,
wrecked me.
Where have you been then all of Tony's life?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
Have you been a visual artist for the same well, length Tony has, or what's your career?
I've always done art. I was inspired by my grandfather, and I never met him. I mean, there was artwork at my grandmother's house. I'd seen him, like, something I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
It was a little better than most kids, so
sure.
I kind of took to it and did it. And
did you study it in school? I mean, in college?
I took a painting class in high school. I minored it in college just because I knew I could get an
A. You could get an A, yeah.
I mean, the great thing is that he's largely self-taught, you know? And I never got along with institutions like schools, you know, at all.
Well, he sort of shares that with you,
my friend. Yeah. So,
tough way to learn, but it's
self-taught, you know, it, local boys.
And
done
you know
good.
What? and it's kind of a good way to learn because you don't have people saying do this, do that. You just go. You forge your own path, and there's some grace to be found in that, and some real individual freedom to be found in that.
When did you start painting seriously? Then, I mean,
well, actually, I have three kids. General Kevin and Angela, I'm going to give them a plug. And my
Go
wife,
ahead.
Kathy,
yes.
been very supportive. And
what are their
unfortunately,
names?
My biggest fan won't be at the show. My daughter's in Mexico studying. But,
what are the names of all of your kids? I want you to do this. What are their names? You can say it on the air.
Oh, yeah. I did. Oh.
No, you said you had two kids.
Three kids.
Three kids.
General Kevin and Angela.
Same slow.
That was so
getting
Kirk. We're old, Kirk.
You have to talk a little slower.
They'll like that. Jenna, Kevin, and Angela.
Good. So raising kids takes some time.
And my daughter, when she finished high school, I said, "Now it's my time."
Really?
So I just said, "I'm going full out. This
wow.
is what I'm doing." Because unfortunately, I lost my job. My wife reminds everybody that. I don't want to say anything bad about my wife. But
you want to say her
she's
name?
Been very supportive, Kathy. She's an incredible woman.
Oh, she's lovely. She's
very supportive.
Well, as Tony will tell you.
She's his Michelle, you know.
Yeah.
She's,
as Tony will tell you, too, to be the wife of a working visual artist is to be this close to sainthood.
My wife's a saint, and so is his.
Yes.
They hold the whole monkey house together.
You start to realize how special they are when they...
How deep did you dive into it, then? You had time all of a sudden. You had this sort of deep-seated passion for it. Did it just explode?
It exploded. I'm like, this is what I have to do, and I'm going to try to produce better and better work and try to, you know, learn how to do this and, you know, reach out to people.
The first time we went out to Kirk's house, I went with Max and Oshkot and the guys that are my son and who I run Adventureland with, and I looked at the paintings and I thought, this is they were everywhere.
Why did
every room of his house? And I thought, this is a guy who works like I do.
Why did
he has
you go
to
out,
make
Why
this.
Did you go out there that first time?
Because
you got your curiosity.
I saw
was
two
up
or three of these landscapes that just destroyed me.
Wow.
They reminded me of nothing so much as
Andrew Wyeth. Yeah,
Andrew Wyeth, Charles Birchfield, Charles DeMuth. Mm. I mean, there was something wholly American about them in the best way of saying that. You know, this is, it's about kind of who you are in the world and where you come from. This was here. They're not nostalgic. They're not sentimental. They're about
beautiful
history. Well, and
they're beautiful.
And, you know, I made one visit and I bought two paintings that day. I just had to have them. And at the time, I wasn't really flush with cash either. I had no business buying anything, but I saw them and I thought, you know, these are going to get away.
That's really high praise. We're going to be here all hour with actor, writer, artist, dear friend of mine, Tony Fitzpatrick. His son, Max, one of the leading podcast stars in the country, will be on soon to talk about their podcast. Paulina Jimenez, the director of the Park Art Center, and Kirk Kerndall.
When we met in 1938, it was
playing Damn Yankees on the show. I have in here Kirk Kerndall and Tony Fitzpatrick and Paulina Jimenez. Paulina, you run the Park Art Center in Villa Park, and you are on September 22nd, the night of September 22nd, which is this Friday at 6 p.m., you were having a show that you have charmingly and correctly titled Local Boys Done Good, the works of Tony Fitzpatrick and Kirk Kerndall. These works, I just want you as the arts administrator here to talk about the difference in the styles of these two gentlemen. I think it covers the waterfront, man. If you've got you got empty walls in your house, you can do just fine going to this show.
Yeah, you are correct. They are very different, but they're both very powerful.
No question.
No doubt about it. And, well, we knew Kurt, and we had seen his work, and we thought that he was ready. And
how did you discover his work? We've heard how Tony did. How did you discover his
work? Vivian Maier.
Yeah. he came to one of our shows, the Vivian Maier show that we did in Parker Center. Also, before I forget, I wanted to thank Country Financial because they're the sponsor of the show. We pulled the show last minute, and they helped us out with all the help that we needed because normally show takes months.
Yeah, of course, sure.
So to put the show together and the quality that we wanted, they came through. So I want to thank them. Country
Financial.
Fine, sure.
Yeah. Thank anybody.
But going back to Kurt's work, like Tony was describing, is very powerful. He has about, I would say, 21 pieces total?
22 pieces.
So that's a lot of work.
It was interesting.
And then the pieces from Tony, when I went to his studio and the etchings were so powerful, they're five-color etching. And then he was talking about how personal their work was for him, the period in his life where he did them in 2002, 2003.
Right? It was kind of right after 9/11.
Yeah, 9/11.
You wound up in Montana. You were in
Montana.
Yeah,
I was doing an artist in residency at University of Montana in Missoula. And really kind of the first time I'd ever spent an immersive amount of time in nature.
Yeah.
And some kind of astonishing stuff happened. You know, I said, I'm going to find what's good. And that kind of reawoke this great affection for nature. And
that
something
wasn't...
very odd happened to me. I took a walk along this river right by the hotel that I was staying by the university. And I kept picking up scraps and stuff that I would draw into these pieces. And I realized at a certain point I kind of wandered away from the river and I was in the woods and I was lost. And, you know, you can drop me off at, you know, 68th and Stony Island. I know right where I'm at.
Sure.
I'm not.
There are no street signs. I didn't. Out
exactly.
There.
And there's no light.
Right.
You know, I mean, when it gets dark, it gets like no kidding dark. And, you know, I kind of panicked for a couple of minutes and then. There's that lizard part of your brain that I listened for the river, and when I heard where it was coming from, I made my way back. And
there was your hotel.
Yeah.
There was a hotel.
Well, the hotel was about another mile and a half down the river, but I did learn that when you get out in nature, you're always awed at how insignificant you are in the whole big picture of nature.
Sure.
I mean, in the middle of the woods, and these woods, by the way, there are grizzly bears, there are black bears, there are wolves, there are pumas. And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to be the guy they find 3 weeks after a badger is chewed through his pancreas, you know? I'm thinking, but it has a way of humbling you. It has a way of making you realize, no matter how big you think you are a popcorn fart.
So how many, all of the pieces on exhibit at the gallery, Paulina, of Tony's are from this Montana period in his life? They're all landscapes, Tony landscapes?
This particular from Kurt, the collection from Kurt, when I visit his studio, I gravitated to the landscapes right away. He has so many pieces that from the Midwest and the farmhouse, and they all work together. Yeah, now I have seen other beautiful paintings that he has done, so still life, but this was a nice series, a nice large collection of, like I said, about 21 pieces. So we thought it was perfect for the show.
You know, it strikes me, Kirk, in the one, I've seen the ones that are on your website, and they, if these evoked the sort of rural Chicago suburbs of the time. I don't spend much time out there. I mean, this one looks like it is Montana. You know what I mean? Are these done from memory?
No. Well, most of the stuff I work off of photographs, just places I've seen.
Yeah.
I just kind of try to embellish them a little more artistically than a photograph.
And most of them of
they're
this area?
Yeah, most of them are. This one was kind of a collaboration of just...
You know, there used to be a lot of prairie. And a lot of natural world.
There's a prairie state, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's not enough fur anymore.
And DuPage County particularly built up that corridor along 22nd Street and Butterfield Road and, you know, made industrial property out of it. And we lost something really vital. I mean, we lost a real connection to the natural world, you know, and the farms kind of depended on that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It was a symbiotic kind of thing.
Well, when you guys grew up out there, I mean, mm-hmm. Kirk, I mean, you'd ride your bikes, and you must have seen things like
oh, yeah.
this, right?
It was pretty
rural
when we were growing. Even Main Street, where the school we went to, you could just walk across that any time, and there was no traffic. Nobody was on the road.
Forest by Highland Hills?
Yeah. My friend tied a girl up to a tree there.
Tied a what?
A girl up to a tree there.
Okay.
Tied a girl to a tree. You've got some weird ideas about dating out there.
It was a very dark forest.
Yes, we've already gotten Tony had a crush on Kirk's sister. Now you're tying girls to trees.
No, I wasn't doing the tie.
We'll get into the real juvenile delinquency problem.
It's like River's Edge before you know it.
Out in Villa Park and Lombard.
Pretty soon it turns into Lord of the Flies. What are you going to do?
We've tried to make this a very rarefied exploration of art and the creative nature, but after the news at the half hour, we'll get into the juvenile delinquency that fuels.
We are fluent in it, sir.
Kirk, how many pieces are you going to have up in the show?
I think it's 22, and actually one of them is not a landscape. It's a self-portrait. It's a very
marvelous painting.
It's a very frightening self-portrait, but it was something I wanted to do without embellishing my perhaps good looks. Or not good looks.
You're fine looking. You're
very,
fine
very.
Looking. You're fine looking. Tony didn't beat you up as a child. You
great Chuck Close.
No, Tony would not have attempted. Kirk is one of these guys who works out before breakfast.
Kirk, is this your first gallery show?
I've been represented very shortly by galleries. I never had like an opening. It was just, you know, okay, I'll take your stuff. And one closed down shortly after I got my stuff in there. There was another one in Hinsdale. Lovely older woman had it and for a little bit, and she ended up retiring, so there was never a big opening for my work.
You excited or nervous?
I'm very excited. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
It's huge.
It's a great opportunity.
I haven't had a show there in 30 years, you know, so...
All of Tony's old girlfriends and old teachers are going to come there.
Yeah, they so miss me.
Ripping his paintings apart.
Well, most of the people I talk to know who he is, so that's a plus for
me. Knowing and I know him and love him, but there may be some people out there. Hey,
looking
man, I remember.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll never forget when he stole my dad's car. We got to take a little commercial break, then we'll get some news, and then we'll carry on with these lovely people. Tony Fitzpatrick, Kirk Kerndel, and Paulina Jimenez, director of the Park Art Center, who's putting all of this together. Go to Park. This is very easy for you people. parkartcenter.org.
Goodbye, old girl. My old girl. When you awaken, I'll be gone. And tell you where I go.
I wish I could play this whole song. It's one of my favorites from Damn Yankees, and I'm playing Damn Yankees because the Cubs' magic number is 10, and so get ready for baseball mania.
Yep.
My guests are Tony Fitzpatrick, artist, writer, raconteur. He's in the news. He's going to France in a few months or weeks to be
in
Patriot.
I'm going for 5.5 months.
Unbelievable.
Because
Patriot, this Amazon series I have watched the entire first season, and it's really a good first season. And Tony, in the first few episodes, hit like two lines and a scowl. But someone, this guy recognized. They recognized his immense talent, and now he's going to Paris, and it'll be a bigger.
Yeah, part. I've you know, the 7, 8, and 9 episodes. Jack Birdbath comes back in it.
Yeah,
it's very frightening.
I know.
Very frightening.
So it's a very, very lucky thing that Paulina Jimenez is the director of the Park Art Center has been able to get Tony to be one part of the Local Boys Done Good show that opens this Friday at 6 o'clock.
You know, and I hope that the Villa Parkers know just how lucky they are to have this place. And Paulina Jimenez, what she has done.
Talk about this place. And when did it start? When did you get involved? Where are you from? That's not a Villa Park accent.
No.
No,
deep fell apart.
No, yeah. I'm original from Puerto Rico, but yeah, you're right. And Then later when I came to study here, I was very fortunate to receive a scholarship to study at the Art Institute. But I live in the city in Chicago, and the energy that you sense in the Chicago, where you come across a sculpture, a mural, when I moved to the suburb, I was missing that. There was actually only one sculpture in the whole town in Villa Park, and that was in front of the library, and that was it.
Who was it? Who was the sculpture?
It was a local artist.
The young Tony Fitzpatrick.
No.
But that was some of the things. So a group of artists, a local artist, we were running into each other. Hey, I'm an artist too. And back in 2015, October, we officially got the certification as a 501c3 nonprofit, and we wanted to establish this as an art center, art gallery, and also for educational purposes, and to be able to bring art to community where there was nothing, and a place where people can gather together, people could bring their ideas, a place that you see the impact of the arts does to different towns. We've seen it in Chicago, in Pilsen, in Wicker Park.
That was one of the reasons.
When you two guys were growing up, when you two guys, your contemporaries, Kirk Kerndall and Tony Fitzpatrick, when you were growing up out there in Lombard and Villa Park, what kind of artistic input?
You know what? The truth of it was is that I was surrounded by art, but that nobody was calling art. Comic books, tattoos, horror movies. I mean, things, Mad Magazine, Dick Tracy, Chester Gould, the great Chicago Tribune cartoonist. I was really touched by all of these things, but nobody was calling it art. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody was ever according it
the respect it deserved.
The respect it absolutely deserved. I mean, not until the High-Low Show in Chicago in 1990. Yeah. When a bunch of New York critics decided for us that comics were actually art.
What influenced you as a visual artist? I mean, you did.
Early was my grandfather. Then, like I said, I never met him. He just, seeing his art, I'm like, well, if he can do it, why can't I?
He was a painter.
No, Ike's more pastels and a wood carver.
And these were around your home?
In my grandmother's house. I'd see him, and I always wanted to play with the wood carvings. And my grandmother said, you don't touch those, you just look at them.
And he was also very inspired by a lot of classical art. You know, the stuff from the Renaissance and stuff like that. I mean, you see it in his work. Yeah, he would copy, you know, Rembrandt paintings.
Da Vinci and,
and they look good, I would, you know, my biggest inspiration was, you know, Mad Magazine, National Lampoon, you know, delinquent stuff. And you know, for me to be able to continue, I had to leave.
Yeah. Kirk, for you, I mean, I know that you sort of have followed Tony's career because you knew of him when you were younger, and you obviously would, you know, hear him when he had a radio show and know about him. Was there any sense of envy that you felt that, wow, Tony left and he made it as an artist?
Without a doubt. It's like, look what he's doing and what am I doing? You know, it's like, not that I've done anything wrong.
Yeah, right,
you know,
sure.
I certainly loved everything I did. I have a, you know, wonderful family. It's like, and I was telling his son about that, you know, what would have happened had we met? Oddly enough, maybe I wouldn't have met my wife and my whole life would have been completely different, you know, and I certainly wouldn't have wanted that. And not that he would have changed, you know, I could have been hanging out with him that night, the night I met my wife. You know, you just like.
Well, I also
one of the things I admire about him is that he did stay out there. He loves his town. He loves his family.
Kids,
he loves his community. And he made his way as an artist anyway. And that touches me. I really.
Paulina, there must be, in the neighborhood, once you announce this show, there must be some kind of considerable, I just think the title is so wonderful, Local Boy's Done Good.
Doing our English teachers proud.
There must be a sense of pride and a buzz, as they say in the business, about this show. Is there?
Yeah, there's a buzz. And a lot of people have come to me and told me stories about Tony, that they know Tony from this. If I can also mention something, this is just a perfect example of what we need, this local galleries in the suburbs to.
Absolutely.
Because, no question.
We, just like Kurt, there are many, many other amazing jewel artists out there, and they need a place to exhibit. If you ask any artists, what do they need? They need to be able to produce more work and a place to exhibit. What good is it to make all this beautiful work and not have a place to exhibit?
They need to foster community, and that's the way our communities get really great. by a bunch of artists having vested interest in one room where the lights go on. There's four walls and there's dialogue. There is an exchange of ideas, and you can build a cathedral on that.
Very interesting.
Well, just and it's opposed to the whole gallery system that you have been fighting forever, Tony Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, a guy who's owned galleries for 30 years who's, you know,
done it the right way. Yeah.
Oh, I've tried to. I mean, I really.
Because you what you have done in a sense is remove the politics that fuels the way galleries have long run in this city.
Well, we don't really take any percentage, you know. So
I know
other.
Is that unusual? Yeah.
Yes.
No, Max and I have other ideas about how to make money. I mean, my son has an incredible gift for licensing. We started a podcast,
and we got to get Max on here to talk.
And you know, I'm just the biggest reason I wanted to do this show was that this gallery out there is absolutely necessary. I owned a gallery on Villa Avenue in Villa Park for 7 years called The Edge.
Yep.
And we held a lot of pretty big shows, you know, for who we were. And when I heard there was a new art gallery out there, they've had Mark Hauser. They've had Paul Ehrlich. They've had Vivian Meyer. You know, for a small community art gallery, that's pretty heady stuff.
The other great thing about it, Paulina, is that not only is it good for the artists, it's good for the people who
just want to.
You guys both as visual artists know, and you too as an owner of this place, know what people get from seeing great art. We got to take another break. We'll talk more with Tony Fitzpatrick, Paulina Jimenez, Kirk Kerndall, and we'll get good old Max Fitzpatrick out here and explain how he is carrying his dad through this podcast adventure they're having. And how
he's trying to drag me into the new century, and he's doing a good job.
Go to parkartcenter.org to get more details. The opening is Friday, and the show runs through October 28th. But the opening reception should really, really be something.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Back.
And it's free to the public.
Free drinks.
Free drinks.
Yeah.
Free admission.
Yes.
Pay for the paintings.
You gotta have heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start. You gotta have hope. Mustn't sit around and know.
Candy-flavored ones.
Candy-flavored bourbon?
Yeah,
not my scene.
The game's going to hell since I quit.
That's Tony Fitzpatrick, who hasn't had a drink in more than 20 years, kind of advising me to stay away from candy-flavored bourbon.
Well, they have this stuff that's like an atomic fireball. You know, what's that? Cody snuck it into the house one day.
Max is.
It was Brent. It was Fireball.
Fireball.
It's really
Max
bad.
Max is Tony's advisor on all things podcasting and all things not to drink for the rest of his life.
No kidding.
Max, how did this podcast thing come to be, and how did it come to be?
Well,
I know it just started.
It just started. It stemmed from actually when I was in high school. A lot of my teachers would figure out who my dad was because I'd have to write papers and stuff. And one time I had a teacher, Miss Kane, and she was reading my paper and she goes, "Tony Fitzpatrick, he was great. Are you related to him?" She goes, "You got to be related to him.
He was great. Whatever happened to him?"
Yeah, right.
Whatever happened to him?
I said, "Yeah, he's my dad." And she goes, "Oh, my God." And then she pulled out this story about when he was on the radio with Buzz Killman, Drive-In Reviews. She goes, "He trashed Rudy." And apparently, you know, Rudy is this heartfelt football movie about this kid who sucks at football. But I guess he was the only guy who had the guts to kind of make fun of Rudy.
Because I hate Notre Dame. Yeah. The hell with him.
Well, I would get a bunch of these stories about his radio days, and I sort of got nostalgic and you know, this podcast revolution is going down.
No kidding. Lise Graham, the producer here, has a great podcast she's doing, too. And there's a lot of
right on.
There's a lot of freedom. And her podcast is all about, she interviews mostly bands and tries to get at their creative influences. What is the theme of your podcast?
Just sort of the world through our filtered life. I mean, it sounds
warped perspective.
It sounds very self-indulgent, but we have a good time just exchanging stories and just doing takes of what we think.
The two
you know?
Of you talking would entertain me.
Yeah,
we interviewed Andy Davis. We've got an
interview. Great film director.
Yeah, we've got an interview in the can right now of with Steve Conrad.
Who is, he did
that
Patriot.
And we're going to have Rick Hogan.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
We're going to have Kirk Kernel and Paulina Jimenez.
Everybody Why don't you just take this show and take the commercials out and run it as a podcast?
Well, you can swear on our podcast.
Oh, that's all. I can do that.
We're struggling right now.
Kirk, what does drive you? I mean, is it the need to? That's a great theme for, and you'll have to talk about this on, what's the name of the podcast?
The Max and Tony Show.
That's inspiring.
Yeah, we were held back for like 6 months of going back and forth with names.
We were trying to figure out what to call it.
The Max and Tony Show. We talked about your podcast. I'm pointing at Lise.
What's her podcast called?
Lise FM. Lise
dot
FM.
Cool.
We'll check it out.
I'm new to this whole world myself. Where do people find your podcast? How do you find it?
We're on iTunes.
Yeah, we're on SoundCloud.
iTunes,
we're on Apple.
Go to the Max and Tony Show.
Yeah, the Max and Tony Show.
Kirk, now that you've done like a radio, you'd be a pro on the podcast.
Yeah.
Huh?
We have plans for him. And you.
Yeah.
You know? Kind of one of the things that we've always kept in mind is studs.
Yeah, sure.
That a good conversation, no matter who it's with, no matter what it's about,
can work.
Sparks the imagination.
Yeah.
And keeps people interested. And, you know, podcasts have just democratized all of this
so much.
And it's a good thing, you know. The Studs Terkel Archive is going to be made public again. A great guy named Tony Macaluso is reinitiating all of it. And I learned so much from listening to Studs interview people, everyone from, you know, Marlon Brando and Bob Dylan to Kid Farrell.
Yeah. Studs interviewing the 23-year-old Bob Dylan is one of the great.
It's hysterical.
Is one of the great entertainments on the face of the planet, because Dylan is certifiably at 23 Dylan.
Yeah.
He's like, why do you write your song? And Suds is like, well, Bob, you look like, he calls him, describes him like this. In the studio, he goes, he looks like, ladies and gentlemen, he looks like a Huckleberry Finn. Huckleberry Finn were alive in the 20th century.
A bedraggled young man. Yeah.
And he makes him play. He makes him get out his guitar and play live on air.
And by the end of the interview, Bob Dylan is so fascinated by
Studs. Asking
Studs. He's interviewing Studs.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning he's trying to be very oblique and very cool and not be interviewed, and Studs won't let him.
Yeah, I know, it's brilliant.
You know,
he's
a great interviewer.
It is brilliant.
Studs got the best out of people. There's this interview with him and Mike Royko from a long program called The 90s, and Royko
Tom Weinberg.
Great Tom Weinberg.
And Studs just comfortably calms him down. And he just does a
that happened
job.
More than once.
Yeah, I have personal memories of that. Well, I can't wait to listen to that. I listened to the Andy Davis show, and I thought it was great. I just don't know how I got
Thank
it.
You.
I mean, this is me and the internet. I don't know how I got it. Local Boys Done Good, the works of Tony Fitzpatrick and Kirk Kerndel. Are you upset that you get second billing here, Kirk?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'm his wingman. I've got 20 little juvenile delinquent etchings, and then 12 beautiful landscape etchings.
Paulina Jimenez, you must be quite proud to have brought this. And this is a
very exciting show, very exciting. And again, thank you for the opportunity. And
what's this?
And people definitely should go to our website, parkartcenter.org, And if they also want to support the gallery, we also have now a crowdfunding going with Generosity. They can also find the link in our website, too.
How big a space is it?
I would say it's about 1,500 square feet.
Okay,
yeah.
Cozy.
A beautiful space, wall lighting.
I would like to personally invite the village manager of Villa Park.
Yes.
Who's been a little bit too busy to get there for 2 years.
2 years.
So I really think that maybe he ought to make an appearance, and we will buy him a drink.
Does he drink? Maybe he drinks too much.
I hope he does.
Maybe he can't
go out.
Maybe he locks himself in a closet.
Maybe by 6 o'clock he's done. When I had a gallery out there, I mean, part of the problem was getting
support
the village
from,
to kind of embrace it and to claim it, you know? I mean...
Just in meeting you, Paulina, I get it. I get it that you do this for the artists themselves. But as I said before... The people who really benefit from seeing art are the people who don't make art.
That's right.
Those are the people who need to see it. Yes. Kirk, you're excited. You're a little anxious. I'm sure you want to sell all the pieces on the wall.
Very nice.
But for you, I think at this stage, as you're coming to this whole game a little late, the whole thing for you is just being able to show it.
That's a very nice opportunity.
We do it for the applause, Rick.
Yeah.
That's why we make art. That's why we act. That's why we write stories. That's why to make a connection with people.
I think it's my quest to be noticed my whole life. I was very quiet as a young kid and just try to show off once in a while.
That's why you're not in that Tony Fitzpatrick in crowd, sending off firecrackers or whatever that did. Has your art, since you've gone into this full time, and I'm going to say you're a full-time artist now. Has your art grown? Do you feel empowered?
I think I'm learning a lot. I do a lot of personal research to better my skills and find out what I think is, why do I like something and try to make my work better. I mean, I feel like I have a lot more to come.
You will expand beyond landscapes, do you think?
Well, I do. Oh, still life's portraits. I mean, I
do you work
I
in
also
any
sculpt,
other...
too.
You
so,
do?
But,
Tony, this must be, because you are a working artist, and Max, mm-hmm. you hang around with a million working artists.
So is he.
This is, I know that, but also hearing this from a grown-up,
yeah.
as opposed to a, you know, someone like Fiona's age or something, it's got to be, warm your heart tremendously, because there are a lot
it's
of
energizing.
People who never get a chance to do
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely, it's energizing, and... I have one regret that I didn't get to know Kirk back when I owned The Edge.
Thank you.
Because it would not have taken another 30 years for him to have a show.
Did you have enough stuff to put on the walls back then, 30 years ago?
Probably not, but okay. I could have.
Yeah. Tony had asked you to. Yeah, there'd be a frenzy. I mean,
well, that's the other thing I've gotten much quicker.
There'd be a frenzy.
I mean, the thing I notice about him is he works like I do. I mean, he works like all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean... I may not get to, you know, like, you know, my other appointments, but I get to my studio every day.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And
Kirk, is your studio in your home?
Yeah. It's a mess.
Every room in his house, there are paintings, you know?
There's paintings everywhere.
Yeah, and they're marvelous. They're absolutely marvelous.
I'm leaning up against each other.
You should bring Fiona out.
I should.
Oh, we'll buy her a drink.
She's ready. She has her birthday parties at the Billy Goat, so we might as well.
How old is she now?
13.
You know, it's time to start drinking.
Yeah, here, this is why the village manager is thinking, well, maybe I won't go to that. Yes, all you 13-year-olds in Villa Park, free beer on Tony Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll tell you stories about himself at 13. Tony, it's always great to
see
you.
Thank you so much.
Kirk
this
Kerndle,
has been great.
It is great to meet you. And,
thank you very much.
And congratulations, and I couldn't. Be happier for you. And Paulina Jimenez, it's about time I wrote some kind of story about the Park Art Center. I just think what you're doing out there is tremendous. And the reasons you're doing it are great. Max Fitzpatrick, he's off to Europe soon to start the international podcast of the Max and Tony Show.
Yes.
Go to iTunes or where else?
Yeah.
Apple or SoundCloud, the Max and Tony Show.
That's right. I know any of these things. Apple
there will be a Rick Kogan episode very
before
soon.
Before they leave. Before, they leave. And then after that will be the village manager of Villa Park. he will be.
You know,
I want to be on the radio with
him. If he shows up,
I'll be on
I will
radio
gladly have him on the podcast. You
Listen,
know?
Sir or
I
madam,
got some love
whoever
for
you
Villa
are.
Park.
I know
believe
you do.
It or not.
Sir or madam, whoever you are, there is you will be on a podcast and you will get free beer. I don't know how you can turn this down. maybe he's thinking of running for governor or something.
Yeah, really.
Who knows? Tony Fitzpatrick, Kirk Kerndall, they are the local boys done good. The
dynamic duo.
Art Center is owned and operated by Paulina Jimenez. ParkArtCenter.org. The opening is Friday night at 6 o'clock. Thank you all. Max.
Thank you.
Knock him dead, Rick. Knock him dead.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo.
A little hoedown in honor of our new star.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo.
Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. I'm playing, as I told you before, songs from Damn Yankees. You know, there ain't a lot of Broadway shows about baseball, and since the Cubs swept the St. Louis Cardinals and everybody has baseball fever now because the magic number is 10, I'm treating you to some Damn Yankees. Chicago Monumental, a book published within the last year by Larry Broutman, is as magnificent a book as I can remember seeing. And I see hundreds of books every week. It is a gathering of terrific, terrific photos by Larry, text by Larry, organized in among the most compelling way imaginable. When you have not only Anton Cermak's mausoleum in a book, and Al Capone's relatively simple gravestone, you're on to something. Larry, thank you for coming in, and thanks for doing this book. You are a great photographer. You're a terrific writer. What is your background?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I'm not really a trained photographer. I'm an engineer. And engineers and necessarily,
but engineers are the smartest people in the world, right? They are.
Well, you might say I taught engineering for a number of years too at IIT in Chicago, and you know, but I think engineers are not necessarily identified with writers, authors, photographers.
Sure.
And I became interested in photography kind of in the middle of my career as an engineer. And
what was the catalyst for that? What sparked your interest?
Well, I think the catalyst, Rick, was the fact that in the we did a lot of research, scientific research.
Sure.
And in the laboratory, you use photography as a tool.
Of course.
So I was using it in my career as a research tool, and it kind of just slowly changed to larger and larger subjects. And as opposed to out of the laboratory.
Right.
And so I actually became really interested in more like landscape photography and actually wildlife photography.
As a hobby.
As a hobby. But I really took it seriously. I worked with some of the best photographers in the world, in the United States. But I'd say they're world-ranked photographers.
Sure.
What's great about being knowledgeable about some of these photographers is they often give seminars, workshops. You can travel with them, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that. And so I really began to take this very seriously. That was like in the 1990s.
You did some work for Lurie Children's Hospital, did you not?
I did. In fact, that's kind of what started me off on the book writing that I've been doing in more recent years.
How did that come to be? Because I've been spending some time there involved with another story. That's one of the most remarkable places I've ever been in my life. Part of it is the artwork and photography.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but on every floor at Lurie, I got involved right when the hospital was breaking ground, actually.
Wow.
When they were breaking ground for the hospital.
Yeah.
And I saw this occurring because I don't live that far from it. And I had done a previous project that I donated to the hospital when they were on, when Children's Hospital was on
Children's
Clark
Memorial.
Street.
Yeah,
Children's
sure.
Memorial.
Sure.
I built something called the Safari Cafe, or I mounted wildlife photographs onto what I hired a painter that painted a savanna scene on a wall at Children's. And then we put these wildlife photographs.
Why children's? Why any connection to the hospital?
No, it's just something that I thought would be helpful to children in a hospital setting. And so when I saw Lurie going up, the Lurie Hospital, I walked over and introduced myself and said, you know, I did this project for you guys when it was Children's Memorial. I really be interested in donating more wildlife photographs. And what they said is, yeah, that would be very interesting, but actually what we'd really like is something whimsical, something that, you know, the kids would kind of laugh at or find enjoyment with rather than just a picture, you know, of an animal. And that was that decision by the committee that was involved in the interior design of the hospital launched my career, because I said, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. You mean we're going to put animals into Chicago environments? And they said, that's exactly what we want to do.
How interesting.
So I always chuckle about it and say it's the first time that a committee had come to, I think, a really great decision. And we wound up doing a totally whimsical treatment by putting my wildlife photographs of animals into Chicago iconic scenes, which I photographed. So I wound up photographing like the Crown Fountain and the Bean and very identifiable Chicago subjects.
Sure.
And by Photoshop methods, and good sense of humor, we put animals into these photographs. So that book, which then evolved, was called Chicago Unleashed.
Right? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And did you self-publish that?
I self-published that book, and the proceeds, excuse me, Rick, recovering from a cold also, the proceeds from the book are all donated. The author's royalties are donated to...
Such as they are, yeah.
Such as they are, right. Books are not the greatest way to make a living.
No living at all.
Right. And so the royalties are donated to the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind and also Access Living, both organizations dealing and helping people with disabilities. So all the royalties for all my books are going, you know, to those two organizations.
It's empowering to publish a book. It's empowering to see your own work. And I'm sure that Chicago Unleashed was a very empowering experience for you. Did you immediately then say to yourself, okay, I've done this, I want to do... This is Chicago Monumental is an unbelievably ambitious book, and to your ever-loving credit, you pulled it off. But it is an incredibly ambitious... It's an ambitious subject.
It is, and I really... I'm flattered by your comments, because I know you've written books, and you know what's involved. But I think the concept for Chicago Monumental grew out of the fact that I had already been photographing monuments of some sort for the first book and for Lurie Children's Hospital. So it evolved into thinking that
you could pull this off.
I might be able to pull this off. I knew it would take a lot of time and a lot of effort, but I had the time, and I had the time available. I'm retired.
Oh, and you certainly had the energy. Lurie Broutman is my guest for this entire hour because his book, Chicago Monumental, deserves this entire hour.
There's something about an empty chair that makes me feel afraid when he's not sitting there.
Thanks, Audrey Mumpower, for playing tunes from Damn Yankees. The magnificent Chicago Monumental is the work of the photographer and writer Lurie Broutman. It is his second book. It is it's easy to order. Chicago Monumental. You can just, you know, it's in bookstores, I'm sure.
Bookstores
are left and online everywhere. I don't even know where to start with you. It's the first book I've seen in a long time that has one of my favorite, if not one of the most notable sculptures in Chicago, the totem pole.
Yes.
Why is that included? I love that it's included.
Well, that's a good question, because I did photograph it, you know, prior to them removing it.
And, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. I was so happy to see it in here. I really was.
Well, you know, it's different relative to many of the other monuments in the book. If you want to call it a monument, it's definitely a wonderful, you know, art piece.
Oh.
And it was prominent. I mean, I saw driving down Lakeshore Drive, you just can't miss it.
Yeah.
I just felt it belonged in the book.
I'm so glad you put it in here. I miss it. I really do miss it. Another fabulous chapter in here is the Civil War era. And it's wonderful to me because it reminds me of how many Lincolns there are in this town. Were you stunned? I mean, even in your book, I'm going, oh, my God, I forgot that one. I forgot that one. I forgot that one.
I was. I had no concept when I started that, you know, there were, in fact, seven monuments, and there is an eighth, which some people kind of joke about, and because, you know, it really is not much of a monument, but I felt I had to include it.
You mean the Forgotten Lincoln?
Right. And
this is when I must tell you, you're a great photographer, and you must have, boy, you waited until the sky was blue in most of your pictures. This one is when this may be one of the best shots in the book. The Forgotten Lincoln by an unknown sculptor. It's in concrete. It was installed in 1926 at 68th and South Walcott.
You know what I had to do?
I cannot even imagine.
Well, a modern-day photographer, someone that is doing a book of this kind or taking photographs of this kind, you can rely, for example, on Google Street. And I use Google Maps and Google Street a lot. One, to learn if the monument or statue or fountain, for that matter, was on a street as opposed to a park, I could find it online. I could find out which direction it was facing, and I could kind of understand what the surrounding area was like.
Right.
So I used that a lot, and I used it particularly for that statue, and I for that bust, you might say.
Right.
And I often, my protocol was to really go out usually very early on a Saturday or Sunday morning, mm-hmm. when there wouldn't be very many people around.
Sure.
And in that particular case, the Forgotten Lincoln, there was one person around. He walked into my picture and never said a word to me. I photographed him in a most amazing way. And it's really, to my mind, one of the highlights of
the book. Oh, good. So I thought you were going to say, Rick, that's not a good picture. I love that. This photograph is unbelievable,
yes,
frankly.
I think it is.
It is literally worth the price of the book.
It's one of a kind, I would say.
Reasonably priced at $50. The smile, everything about this guy is fascinating.
Right.
Another highlight, I'm just plowing through Larry Broutman's Chicago Monumental because he's going to be on for the whole hour, and we will not be able to digest everything in here, so that's why you should just buy it, ladies and gentlemen. He is donating all of his author royalties to the Chicago Lighthouse and to Access Living because he's a good guy. I don't know all the reasons for his largesse in that way. Did you really go out with these two dogs when you shot everything? He has the two cutest dogs sitting on his head. He's also got an adorable wife sitting in the studio. But did you take your dogs out?
I did.
They were your companion.
They're my companions. They all sat in the back of the car.
Photo assistants.
And can I tell you, it's kind of an odd story, but it's quick. One of the reasons was I often had to park illegally, take my tripod out of the car to photograph some of the statues, and I figured, okay, now I'm not going to get towed with two dogs in the car, right?
Yeah.
So because a lot of the monuments are in locations that to really get the photograph correctly, it's not easy, let's say that.
No, it's not. Another one that you highlight in the book, they're all kind of highlights, is talk to me about, because I don't know if you've seen it a million times, but one of the sort of obscure great monuments in this town is the Stephen A. Douglas tomb monument. It's sort of hidden. Some people, you can kind of see it from the drive if you're looking for it. Isn't that a special place?
I think your comment about it being hidden is very good. Now, for example, that is not far from the campus of Illinois Institute of Technology, where I taught
exactly.
for 15-plus years.
Sure.
I never knew it was there.
Is that right? I can imagine
right.
that.
Right.
So
it's roughly around 37th Street and east of Cottage Grove, I think, something like that. I didn't realize it was there until I, again, started learning more about the sculptors. In this case, that was done by Leonard Volk. Volk was, again, a world-class sculptor and probably responsible for the numbers of monuments that got created in the city starting in the 1860s. And he happened to be Stephen Douglas's cousin.
Yeah.
His wife happened to be Stephen Douglas's cousin. So he did that Stephen Douglas monument. And because I knew about Leonard Volk, I got directed there and I'd never been there.
It's really a cool place, don't you think?
It really is.
Oh, it's magnificent. I know they do. I mean, it's open to the public, and they do some tours, but it's really, really worth it. Stephen A. Douglas Memorial Park, whatever they call it. And I'm plowing through this. You have Anton Cermak's mausoleum in here. Anton Cermak, one of the great forgotten mayors of Chicago, the guy who gave birth to the Democratic machine and how it operates.
Tragic history also in terms of his,
being shot. Yeah, someone's trying to kill Franklin Roosevelt in Miami and shoots Anton Cermak by mistake. There's no telling what Cermak might have gone on to do. We were talking off air before we went on, Larry Brotman and I, about cemeteries. After the news, we'll talk some more about cemeteries because we share, as many of you do, even if you won't talk about your affection for cemeteries, many of you should. These are outdoor art galleries and outdoor history museums. Another one, you highlight that you have a chapter dedicated to artists and writers. And the one thing that strikes me about this one, you feature the work of Jack Carney, who was a great friend of my parents, and I love Jack. I thought he's the guy who makes sculptures out of old, 50s car bumpers when car bumpers were really chrome, and you have the Tin Man and the Wizard of Oz series in Oz Park. The funny thing about the artists and writers thing, if you want to comment on it, I'll do it too, is so many of them are foreign writers who I guarantee you, if you asked 100 people in this city, what are the works of what did Goethe write? You know what I mean?
Yes.
This is from the era when, we wanted to elevate our sense of. Can't tell, but that's from Damn Yankees. I'm playing that because the city will have a baseball fever right now. Larry Brotman is the author and photographer of a remarkable book called Chicago Monumental, which captures every monument in the city, but it is gathered into sections that makes it so compelling. You don't need it. It would also compel you to go out and take a do-it-yourself guided tour and to also just look up. Will you people just look up? They're out there. They're organized into sections of explorers, the Civil War era, statesmen and leaders, writers and artists, science and medicine, champions of the people, men of commerce, the lawless and the law. I'll get to that chapter. Heroes, war memorials, tragedy and healing, the waters of memory, architectural sculpture, and then some 3D images in the back. Larry, as you well know, there are very few, relatively few, comparatively few memorials or monuments to women as compared to men. True?
True.
This isn't just some Rick Kogan pipe dream.
No, you're right.
The Jane Addams Memorial, again, one of these terribly obscure, in a place where it does not get a lot of foot traffic. I really find that remarkable because Louis Bourgeois, one of the great sculptors of the 20th century, created this. Do you like it too?
Oh, I think it's wonderful, and the setting that it's in is also wonderful. But as you point out, it's pretty hard to find.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the what is called the Chicago Women's Park. Now, all of you out there going, I didn't know we had a women's park. At sort of 18th and Indiana. Not a lot of foot traffic, but certainly worth the visit. There are a number of people, I guarantee you, who walk into the Merchandise Mart every day to go to work who do not... Don't you think, Larry, that there are probably people who've worked in the Mart for 10 years who could not tell you one of the heads that sit outside?
I think that's, I'm sure, I totally agree with you on
isn't
that.
Isn't that sad?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. They're wonderful monuments and heads, basically.
Yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right.
That's why we just, you know, we need to look around. We were talking earlier about the Pillar of Fire and the sort of gravestone of Mrs. O'Leary. The Pillar of Fire is a beautiful thing.
It really is. It's in front of the Fire Academy, and it is, in fact, on DeKoven Street, and it's right at the origin of the Chicago Fire from 1871. So it's a very, you know, historically significant monument, and I would, you know, I think people going in that area, it's great to stop by and check it out and look at what it is today.
The other chapter, how did you... This is a very interesting thing. I don't need to get to the soul of your creativity, but you must have had you couldn't have come up with the chapter titles before. You probably just took a bunch of pictures and then started to separate them into kind of like-minded things. How did you come up with the Lawless and the Law, which is one of my favorite chapters in the book?
Well, you're right. That's, in fact, what happened. My goal was to make sure I photographed every what I would call historic monument in Chicago or the Chicago area.
Yeah.
Historic meaning pretty much unveiled prior to World War II, roughly 1940, anything prior to that. And the first statue or monument was actually installed at Rose Hill Cemetery in 1864. So from 1864, so my idea was to photograph every monument that I, you know, that was basically in the city, in Chicago area.
Wow.
That's how it started. But the division into these sections was done after we photographed all the monuments, after the text was written, and with the cooperation of a wonderful book designer, Carol Harrelson, we decided on these areas of grouping together the monuments.
The Alphonse Capone gravestone, not much of a monument, is at Mount Carmel Cemetery. And we were talking about and there are many, 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 many pictures from cemeteries in here, as these places being the great repository for the self-expression of the dead, sort of. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Memories, you know, that are basically precious to those whose a family member or a friend, you know, have died. And some of the incredible sculptors that were in the city working at the Art Institute of Chicago in the early 1900s were responsible for many of those cemetery monuments. And so if you go into some of the cemeteries like Graceland and Rose Hill, you will find basically world-class monuments.
No question. No question. We were talking about the monument that I just wrote about, the new Ernie Banks monument that is in Graceland. But it's a place to go. You know, maybe you think, let's go to Graceland for Halloween or something. You should. You should go to Graceland at any time, or Rose Hill, or Oakwoods.
Yes.
What do you think about, this is very interesting, I'm so glad you're on, Larry Broutman, author, photographer of Chicago Monumental. all the controversy swirling now nationwide about various monuments and locally, and you have a photo in here of the Balbo Monument. I think it's political correctness gone crazy, frankly. I do.
Well,
one man's opinion.
I tried, you know, I did receive some calls once the, for example, in some of the southern states, the, you know, the monuments to Robert E. Lee and so on
down,
were taken down. And so I did get a call from a couple of people saying, well, what kind of Confederate monuments are there in Chicago, you know? And I said, other than the Confederate mound in Oakwood Cemetery, which was really dedicated by the Union to the Confederate soldiers.
The four to 6,000 people who died at the
Camp Douglas,
which was on land donated by Stephen A. Douglas, who we've just talked about.
Correct.
Very close to the IIT campus. Yeah.
Correct. And that, you know, that is basically the only monument of that kind. Now, Balbo is a different story.
Yeah.
You know, there are people, and there's ever since that was basically put up during 1933 World's Fair, there have been people that wanted to take it down.
No question. They want the street name changed.
And the street name, Balbo Drive. There's been a lot of effort to get the city to change the name back to 7th Street.
Yeah, sure.
So I've tried to stay out of the kind of the political fray.
Sure.
But I can tell people, you know, if they ask what the factual information is about that. And, you know, there's just a lot of controversy. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that monument basically disappear and wind up in a museum somewhere.
Yeah. Funny thing is, it, too, is relatively hard to find. You gotta
Very hard to find.
In a very obscure place.
Yes, very obscure. You're absolutely right.
People who want to change the world want to change that. I also love, you have a section where you're talking about Greg Borzo and his fountain things. There's a nice little section in here about some of Chicago's coolest fountains. One of the great things about this book, Larry Broutman, is that it is not all-inclusive. It would be 800 pages longer. It is your personal take. That's what I really like about it, that it is not everything is not in this book.
I mean, for example, in the case
there's a lot.
There's a lot, yeah. But in the case of the fountains, for example, I could have photographed. I tried to, again, stay to fountains that are historic in nature, that were, in you know, basically installed in the early 1900s, like Buckingham Fountain. And so if the fountain was more recent than that, meaning, you know, 1960, 1970, I would not include it.
Now, you said, and we got to take another break, nuts. I have to read this, then we'll take a break, and then you and I will talk some more. Thank you for spending this much time in here. I do love this book. The curse of the billy goat is over, and we've got finally Northside champions, but the billy goat lives on in the friendly taverns that dot Chicago, and in a brand new place, too, the freezer section of your local Jewel Osco. At any one of the 185 Jewel Osco stores in the Chicagoland area, you'll find the world-famous Billy Goat Burgers frozen and ready to go home with you. You're the chef. You know that. But try adding some cheese. That's how you'll be able to create the one and only world champion cheeseburger. Cheeseburger. We'll be right back.
Don't make me brag. I took the zing out of the king of Siam. I took the starch out of the sails of the Prince of Wales. It's no
that, that's the last time you'll hear Damn Yankees unless the Cubs go further in the playoffs than they might. But Damn Yankees is a great, was a great show. Pretty good movie, too. I have a few minutes left with Larry Broutman, the author and photographer of Chicago Monumental, a majestic book. You can order it anywhere. It should be in bookstores if you can find yourself a bookstore. We were talking about the Balbo Monument. I want to tell you, I know that the lions in front of the Art Institute are revered and loved and beloved. I like the buffaloes. Right. I prefer the Buffaloes. I don't get to see them as often. But what do you think about the Buffaloes? They're in Humboldt Park.
Again, not many people would see them. Of course, they're in the book.
Yeah.
And they're really gorgeous. And, you know, the Lions are fantastic as well, of course.
I don't like them to put hats and football helmets on them.
Right, right.
They're not dignified.
Sometimes people trying to climb on them. And again, when I photographed those, again, that was a particular time when I had to get out on an early Sunday morning, so there'd be not many people around.
But it's a beautiful shot. These you must be terribly pleased, not only with the, and one of the other great things about this book is you're not overwhelmed by information or terribly, you know, lengthy stories about each of these. It just, you know, sort of just the facts, ma'am, just the facts, as they used to say in Dryden. It is just enough, and it is more than enough, I think.
Right. Well, thanks again. And the reason is I was really concentrated on the photography.
Yeah.
There are other books that were written in about 1980, classic books that really have quite enhanced descriptions of these.
Sure, Chicago's Public Sculpture by Ira Bach and...
Bach and one by Reedy, yeah. James Reedy, and they had, but their photographs that were just
terrible. Well, they were supplied by whoever ran the building near the monument. Oh my God, they're horrible.
Right. So you know that's what led me to really say no. I'm going to do the book, and the photographs will be the primary interest, and then the descriptions are important. But the photographs are most important.
The idea for there's a pair of glasses included with each book, and in the back there are a number of pages. I can't quite, 20 pages or so. Yeah, about 20 pages. There's a great picture of Larry and his two dogs, too, and his photo assistants at the back, Shadow and Tansy. The idea for the three-dimensional pictures, why?
One of those ideas that somehow
got in your head and you
got in my head.
It.
I can't even tell you how it got there. I felt it was a challenge, and I began to see some of the monuments that had these cannons, like the Confederate Mound at Oakwoods, and I said, "Wow, that would really look dramatic if I could do that in 3D." And I basically, you know, learned how to do the 3D imaging with a camera, and then through Photoshop. So. It's and when I give a talk on the book, I pass out the glasses and we project the images onto a screen and everyone goes, wow, you know, they really stand out.
How often do you talk about the book? You said you're doing something at the Cultural Center this week.
Yes. Typically, I've talked to a lot of historical societies in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. So once every probably 6-7 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that.
Nice.
And it's great because I learn a lot and, you know, when I give these talks... you get a lot of people that are very knowledgeable coming.
Yeah, good.
And so I learn quite a bit myself.
Good, because Larry and I think that if you asked the next 100 people going in the merchandise mart, who are those statues out front, not one of them would know. Okay, I've got to ask you, name your three or four favorites.
Well, for me, you know, in terms of the beauty, it has to be the Golden Lady, the Republic, out in Jackson Park.
Mm-hmm.
And the story associated with it, because it goes back to the Columbian Exposition. And, in fact, I was able to retrieve one of the original souvenir books from the Columbian Exposition.
Oh, nice.
I can see exactly where the original Golden Lady,
sure.
This is not the original, of course, was placed. And then I love the statue on top of what used to be the Montgomery Ward building on Chicago Avenue at the river. And I photographed that, by the way, from the Tribune parking lot.
The Freedom Center parking lot.
Across the bridge.
Oh, neat.
And that probably I photographed that at least 6 different occasions to get the best shot.
How many of these, that's an interesting thing you bring up, how many of these were just one visit?
None.
Success. None?
None. Because, you know, first scoping it out, again, it turns out a lot of statues are under trees, or when they were erected, maybe they weren't, but now they are. So I found out, no, the tree has got too many leaves, too much shade, and I'd have to go back in the winter, you know, to do it. So I'd say you know, there could have been a few, but most of them are more than one visit, one shot.
Well, at least the dogs were getting exercise. Dogs must have thought this is the greatest thing in the world. We're out all the time, getting to go out all
sitting in
time.
The back seat of the car, but
they had to get
patient.
To the car, and they have to leave the car
right,
and go home.
Right.
What's next for you?
Well, I'm finishing up the book on cemeteries called Chicago Eternal. I'm in the proofreading stage, so the book hopefully will be out in February. I'm also doing another whimsical book called Chicago Treasure, which is totally different, a total book of whimsy, again, similar to my first book.
Sure.
Where I photographed children, many of whom were in the preschool at the Chicago Lighthouse.
Oh.
And we put these children, I have a wonderful illustrator, and we put the children into nursery rhymes. They become part of a nursery rhyme.
What a great idea.
It's pretty unusual. It's going to be called Chicago Treasure. And I'm beginning to work on a very serious book for the fifth book, which is called Chicago Courageous, which is on Chicago veterans that have been killed or have in foreign wars, starting with the Civil War and ending with Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's a it's going to be a touching and very serious book, and I'm just really digging into, really working hard on getting that done now. Starting the photographs.
And I'm sure you were a very, very successful engineer, but I wish you'd gotten into this business before. I just wish you'd not become an engineer and just got in the book writing photography business. But Larry Broutman you're something. This book has won the Midwest Independent Publishing Association. It was a finalist for that award. And this other, another independent, it's won some awards, but that's not what means anything to me. It's just a great book.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And you have to come back on when these other books.
Love to. Love
these
to.
These books are out. Thank you and your lovely wife for coming in and indulging my enthusiasm for all things Chicago. This is just a remarkable book.
Thank you so much.
Why did I know about this before? Plus, all of the author royalties are going to the... are being given to the nonprofit agencies, the Chicago Lighthouse, for people who are blind or visually impaired, and to Access Living, which just gilds the rose that is my new pal, Larry Broutman. So, Larry, I can't wait for your next book. Mrs. Broutman, it's great to meet you and see you. Aubrey Mumpower, thanks for engineering. Lise Graham, thanks for doing your podcast, Lise FM. Go look for the podcast and producing this show. Kyle Amari's coming up. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 11 o'clock on the button, and here with the news brought to you by It's Just Lunch, my pal who brought me a birthday cake. That must be the only news